So I hand out CDs of music, artists that are not all Jewish. And I say that my relationship with God is big enough for bringing into the Judaism things that were written by other people, things that have moved me. So that, for example, if you discover yoga or meditation, you say, now I understand prayer better. Rather than saying, now I don't like prayer because I like yoga. Right? It's about bringing the things that you love. So like I said last night, if you love country music, I pity you, but if you love country music, then, you know, you don't say to your kid, like, you know, you got your kid, you don't say to them, I guess this part when the rabbi says, I'm supposed to talk to you about how much I love Judaism, so I guess I'm supposed to tell you I really love saying the Shema or something. Icky, I won't do it. I'd rather you say, you know what, I really love this country song, I'll tell you why. Or if you're Andrew Nerola, I really love this crazy heavy metal song that, sorry to out you with heavy metal. But this is why. Like, this is what it makes me feel. And this is, like, part of my Judaism. This is part of my relationship with God. So we have the spiritual technologies that are out there. And what I'm asking you to do is to put them together with the spiritual technology of Judaism. So I want to do that a little bit right now with the spiritual technology of Rosh Hashanah. In other words, I think that, like all technologies, Judaism is a technology to change your life. And it's not about it's not about a tradition that you put outside of yourself, because it's got to look Jewish, right? If it looks like Fiddler on the Roof, or if it has a U with an O around it, then it's kosher. As if fresh produce isn't kosher. As if that's not really what's coming from God. So then getting away from this idea that Jewish is what looks Jewish, rather than Jewish is about your relationship with God. And the Judaism is the spiritual technologies that change your life and make you a better human being. So what's the spiritual technology that we're in right now? I've shared a little bit of my views already. But this is what the Talmud says that they think is going on at this moment. They said that the shofar, that the gates of judgment are open, right? So God is on high, so this is looking very, very Jewish. God is the king, the heavenly court is assembled, you are being judged, and there's a shofar there, and you're on shul looking your best, because that helps with judgment. You always dress well to go into court. And the rabbis actually say that. You want to look your best for the day of judgment. And you've got God who is El Rahma, the God of compassion, the God of forgiveness, the God of helping you, wanting the best outcome for you. And then you have Satan. You have Satan there. And Satan is the prosecuting attorney. And Satan is lodging accusations at you while you stand there. You don't get to talk much. Before the moment of judgment. The rabbis of the Talmud say, this is like their page on Rosh Hashanah, from Masechet Rosh Hashanah. And they say, the nice thing about the shofar blast, I gave you all these interpretations already. The Talmud says this. The shofar blast is to interrupt Satan, to interrupt the devil. And when the shofar blast comes, it interrupts the devil, and then it's just you and God. And God forgives you, and God, like, lets you know, like, your sentence is eat more cake, right? Your sentence is call your mother more. The sentence is there to help you. It's to help you, it's not to judge you in a negative way. So I said that. That's the technology that we just did with David. We're going to be repeating a little bit of it. That's a spiritual technology. It's supposed to help my life. That's looking a lot like Fiddler on the Roof, right? Believe the devil up in the sky, God on the throne. The rabbi said, of course, we don't believe it that way. So what is the technology meant to do? Rabbi say, interesting news. Satan, the devil's advocate, the accuser, the one, by the way, the one who's accusing you in front of God, it's your own voice. It's the voice inside of your head that prevents you from changing because it knows you too well. It pulls at your faults. It makes you believe that I couldn't really change, or I'm not really worthy of changing, or I'm broken, or there's something wrong with me. It's this voice of judgment that's actually a judgment that makes you feel like you can't change. We have a word for this. Maybe it's not as good as Satan, Satan. But we have a good word for this today, which is your ego. And the rabbis already knew 1,500 years ago that it's a voice inside your own head that's accusing you. And so, it's the ego. It's a part of you that is judging you and making you feel flawed. So what's the technology about? In a way, it's about the idea that God is the judge. And you're not. You're not the judge of others. The Mishnah could not be clearer about the fact that you should never judge an other unless you walk precisely in their shoes. And even then, be careful. Because God's the judge. Let it go. Go through life. Let's just figure someone cut you off in traffic. Someone did a bad business deal with you. So just, you know what? Let God knows why they did what they did, where they came from, what it is. You don't know what's going on for them. They could be trying to steal money to pay for a medical bill or something. Bottom line is, God did not appoint you as the professional critic on this planet. Unless you spoke to God and God gave you that job, and if God did, I have a referral for you. And by the way, I think our whole society is geared to training critics. I got out of academia partly because I felt that it was something was deeply absurd about it. Because basically, I mean, in my field in the humanities, I had students, and I'm basically trying to say, you know, well, you know, maybe you should read, you know, like, what is Maimonides saying? What is the Talmud saying? What is Martin Luther King saying? All the stuff I used to teach. You know, what is the New Testament saying? What is Heschel saying? What is Socrates saying? What's Aristotle saying? What is Isaac Luria saying? And they would sit there and be like, I didn't like it. I didn't care for it. I think it's very complicated. I don't think he writes well. Right? And I'm like, what the hell are we doing? In the higher education, when it should be about appreciation, it'd be like, whoever said that your job is to write a paper being like, well, I didn't think it all added up at the end. I didn't take care for it. It doesn't seem to relate much to me. It's like, we're training, and the people we see on TV, right? We don't do any news anymore. We just have people to give their opinions. Who the heck are you? You know, like, I mean, like, why is now what we do politically is to express views, like, yeah, clearly this and clearly that. Like, everyone's a critic. But I think that that's Satan. I think the idea that it's this critic that's out there. It's the critical voice. And it could be you judging others. Because everyone says, oh, I don't believe in a judgmental God. You should believe in a judgmental God. It's the spiritual technology that tells you, you shouldn't be judgmental. Leave it to God. Right? It's like it's actually the ultimately great way to live, which is let God be the judge. You know, it's not my job. Right? And so, let God be the judge of others. And now let's get back to yourself. Satan. The voice that is slandering you. The voice that paralyzes you. The voice that the shofar is going to interrupt to say you really can't change because it says you can't change. You're a failure. Alright? I don't know if this will help you, but I occasionally share, you know, I already shared, like, my first date with Lynn earlier. Good thing that you weren't here yet. How awful that was. As Paris said, you've been paying for it ever since. Oh, absolutely. I'm glad. So, I was in therapy for many years, and part of what therapy did for me is it set me free in different ways. And in a way, it taught me to pray. Because what I used to tell my therapist, and now I tell myself, and you go back when it's not working. But then, as I quoted a couple of weeks ago, a beautiful poem by Antonio Machado, the person who talks to himself is someone who will end up talking to God. So, what did I learn? One of the things that set me free the most was something very, very simple. I had been engaged in my early 20s, and like a young, very impressionable young Werther, I was, my identity was very wrapped up with that relationship. So when she left me, or we were engaged, we were planning the wedding and all this weird stuff, then When she left me for the editor of a prominent Jewish publication that is extremely pompous and self-righteous, I just felt like the rug had been pulled out under me. And I couldn't find my way to joy. Today, I read very happily Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, who wrote Likutei Moharan, which is just an incredible work, and maybe we can have a class. If you ask me, I'll do it just to read it together. Where he talks about what it means to find your way, to feel joy as a commandment, to know that joy has to be a goal, and to try to work through the things that are getting you down. Because I was just really down for many years. And so I felt the person who knew me best in the world, knew me better than my parents, had rejected me. I didn't know how to get over that. I had Satan's voice in my head constantly judging me. I was constantly saying, you think you're so smart, you think you're so promising, you think you're so gifted, you have some reasons to think so, you have some letters from some professors and others who say so, but it's not true. Because she knew you best, she left you for this guy. And what therapy taught me, and here we get to it, it took me years to accept until one day I accepted it. Her leaving me had nothing to do with me. It was that simple. It had nothing to do with me. It had to do with her. And like God being the judge, you know what? I don't even have to figure it out. For a couple of hours, I was like, I think I know why. It was this reason, and it was this reason. She had a father complex, so she had to marry someone the age of her father, or this, or that, or whatever. At the end of the day, she ended up marrying him to be good, I guess. I don't care. That's up for God to judge. Why it is she is who she is. Why? And one of the things that my therapist told me is that she had left you before she ever met you. It was a way of him trying to tell me, it doesn't have to do with you. Right? People, she's not rejecting you. She's on her own trip. She has her complexes, her background, or whatever. So get over it. Get the voice out of your head that says, you are a failure. Something is wrong with you. Right? You can't achieve your goals. And then I was in academia. Remember when I had my comprehensive exams? I use every opportunity I can to brag. So, right? So I've done 10 years at graduate work in Stanford, after Harvard and Princeton. And I had the most famous, the most important philosopher of the late part of the 20th century. I invited him to be on my doctoral committee. It was a very big deal. He had cancer. It was before he died. And I'm there in my defense. And I've got the guy who's now the head of the conservative movement, who left Stanford to take over JTS. I have the most famous philosopher in the world. I have my second. And I told them what I thought of Heschel, and what I thought of Buber, what I thought of Kierkegaard, what I thought of Wittgenstein and Kant. And at the end, they said, you were terrible. We're really disappointed in you. And then my advisor said, do you want to go out for a beer? Because I always feel obligated to offer to go out for a beer with people after their defense. And I said, that's weird. Like, why would I go out for a beer with you after you said that? And for some reason, I was in such shock, I went, and I really wish I had. It was very bad. So here I am. I've, like, spent 10 years, like, on this work. And by the way, I said, does that mean I fail? Because, and they said, no, you passed. So then I said, I don't want to pass. I want another chance. And they said, nah. And we don't want to go through. It's a week long, by the way. This exam is not an hour long. It's a week long. So they're like, no, we're not doing it again. So you pass. I felt so bad. So the boys came back, right? How can I? Stanford's a little weird. There's a dissertation defense, but you do a whole initial defense of a week long, and then you finish the dissertation, and then you do a final defense. And I don't want to write it, right? I mean, why would I want to write a book when people have just told me that, like, I'm a failure and that I stink? And I internalize their voices, right? So again, Satan came back. I cannot move forward in my life because I'm a failure. Like, it's the voice that the shofar blast is supposed to break through. You're not good enough. You're not what you think you are. Right, you're not a good enough husband. you're not good enough wife. You're not a good enough son. You're not a good enough sister. You're not a good enough friend. You're not a good enough boss. You're not a good enough worker. You're not a good enough neighbor. You know, and those voices just, and that's what's preventing you from changing. That's Satan. That's the spiritual technology we're in. That's the voice that, to me, is stopping you from changing. And I had to do my own therapy for a couple years, and I don't know if it's fully worked, to realize, but it took distance. I think when I look back from the deathbed, I'm going to say, I really like what I said about Heschel and Kierkegaard and Kant and Aristotle, like, and Wittgenstein. Like, I actually think I was right. And I realized that what I was doing was playing on my instrument. I'm going to read you what I've always thought I'd love to be. I know I'm Jewish, I know I'm a rabbi, but I haven't come up with anything better for my epitaph than this. From the brilliant Nobel Prize winning Indian poet of the early 20th century, Rabindranath Tagore. I have had my invitation to this world's festival, and thus my life has been blessed. My eyes have seen, and my ears have heard. It was my part at this feast to play upon my instrument, and I have done all I could. And now I ask, has the time finally come when I may go in and see thy face and offer thee my silent salutation? I've had the Book of Life and Death. We had our invitations to this world's festival. Our lives have been blessed. Our eyes get to see, our ears get to hear all the joys possible in this world. It's a tremendous gift. It's our part at this feast to play upon your instrument. Do all you can. So, maybe you majored in something you didn't use, right? You think, I wasted my time. My question is this. Did you play upon your instrument when you were majoring in? Maybe you trained. Maybe you went to law school. No, I'm not picking on anybody, by the way. I'll change it. Maybe and you decided, I don't want to be a lawyer. The Satan voice comes in, right? All that debt you took on. All the promises of your parents and grandparents, right? All the implications on your spouse, right? Did you play upon your instrument? When you were at law school, were you at the World's Festival? Were you? It's like me at my dissertation defense. It's like, you know what? I said what I thought of Heschel. And they didn't like it. It had nothing to do with me. It had nothing to do with me. I don't know where they were coming from. My brother Barack was a big famous neuroscientist in Boston, world famous. He tells me, oh, they do that to everybody. Right? He's like, they did it to me. And I'm like, what? You got this incredible fellowship. You were off to Cambridge and then Harvard. They built a lab for you. And he's like, yeah. About a month before that, they told me that my whole dissertation was terrible and I was a complete failure and they were very disappointed in me. It's a rite of passage. I call that deeply dysfunctional. I don't believe in hazing and I don't believe in tests. The question was like, so did I sing? You know what? I read all those books. I loved it. I took notes. I taught Hebrew school. I taught adult education. I'm really going to look back at those 10 years at Stanford and say, it was a failure. That's satan. That's like, oh, how can you look at people? How can you know? Thank God I met Lynn. Before that, my mom was like, oh, I have a girl for you. You know, Congregant's daughter. She's finishing her PhD at Yale in English literature. I was like, oh, how could I face her? I'm not, you know, I had one date like that, and I basically said, yeah, I'm not enjoying my PhD. And she's like, ooh, there's something wrong with you. Like, no one wants to hear that you're in the midst of failure. No one wants to hear that you're not following the line, right? Of course, now, what do such people get? They get to be, the way universities pay today, they pay $4,000 a course, and you teach four courses at a time, and you don't get benefits. So, I'm kind of glad I didn't finish that work. $24,000 a year with no benefits, and teaching students who say, yeah, that didn't do it for me. So, but I'm not saying I did such a great job. What I'm saying is, the voices are constant, that I'm not good enough, that you're not, how about here at the synagogue, and I just model it for you. How often have you said to me, Rabbi, like, that was, you know, I really like that music mix you made. Or that was a really nice thing you did. And I said, I'm so glad you say that, because you know something, Jews, they're tough. And like half the time, you know, I do it, no one's listening, and then they're just complaining that I didn't serve lunch that day, and the bathroom was locked, and they needed to get in, and don't I understand that if only, can we have, like, the organist back, and like, it would be nice again, you know, and that's my natural thing, to say to you, I'm so glad you gave me a compliment, because this is hard, this is terrible. Like, and I'm a total failure. It's like, I'm so glad you said that class was nice, because two people walked out during my class, right? The Satan voices, they walked out because of me. I let them down. I'm not reaching you. I'm not reaching you in the way you need to be reached. I'm a failure, right? Rather than, did I play upon my instrument? What are the gifts that God gave you? Right? I have some weird gifts. Okay. You know, some people look in their box that God gave them, and there's some pretty weird instruments in there. Right? I mean, one person got the guitar, and the other person got the trombone, you know, the French horn. So one of my French horns is like, I'm really good at grammar and midrash and this stuff that no one cares about. I should be playing upon that instrument. When someone walks out, do I really think it's because of me? Right? I don't know. Let's say you're teaching a yoga class or something. And someone gets up and walks out. I don't know, if it's me, I'm thinking, you know what, I didn't reach them. I didn't do the meditation well enough. I didn't get them into it. I went with the wrong direction, right? And the question is, it has, like my old girlfriend, it has nothing to do with you, right? It is about, it is not a rejection. You can't let those voices in. Rachel Borrego was bat mitzvah this year, and we're very sad to lose them as members, although Chris got a great job elsewhere, and they moved a couple of weeks ago. And I was very moved by something Chris Borrego said at his daughter's bat mitzvah. He said, Rachel, I keep going back to something I saw in the news. It was about a police officer who stopped a robbery at a convenience store. And someone crazy pulled out a gun, and they were threatening, and he took the person down. And when he was interviewed on the TV news, they said, were you nervous? Were you anxious? Were you scared? And he said, no. I said, why not? He said, you know, I decided to be a police officer a while ago. And when I took that vow, then I just do it. I play upon that instrument. I'm adding that little part. He said, I took a vow, and so I do it. If you've taken a vow to do something, why let in the anxiety? Why let in the fear? Why let in the self-criticism? So, part of what I'm trying to say today is this. If you're like me, your life is consumed by complaint. And it's like, oh, I'm so glad you said that because this is so difficult. And people don't do this. And I'm consumed by complaining like, oh, you know, I'm such a lousy fundraiser. And I'm going to let everybody down. Rather than saying, you know what? The instruments I've been given, play them. And if the synagogue needs a better fundraiser, then they'll get a fundraising rabbi. But right now, they've got a rabbi who shares a story about his ex-girlfriends. And quotes you weird things about the Talmud. Right? I gotta just be me. And then, like, they need someone else, they need someone else. Well, you're not the musical rabbi we used to. That was really nice. And I'm like, okay. You know, but, like, he's still out there. You can go get him. I mean, or you get another musical rabbi. I feel like I can't play guitar in front of you guys. Because people are looking there being like, ugh, that wasn't so good. You know? Rather than, maybe my instrument was, and what I'm good at, is modeling, this is how I pray. This is what I think when I hear the shofar blast. I read some sermons before today. They're all like, Judaism says this, you should do this. Judaism says this, you should do this. Judaism says this, you should do this. I'm like, ooh, that's not my way. My way is like, this is what I'm trying to do on Rosh Hashanah. Maybe you can try it too. So maybe I should say, when I pray at home with my kids, I get out my guitar and I play this. Who cares if the guitar is any good? But I'm thinking, no, they want the musical rabbi. They want the guy who performs well. So I'm like, where are you in your life with this stuff? That you're like, I'm letting everybody down, or people are tough, or my spouse is tough, or what did you vow to do? That cop vowed to be a cop. Did you vow to be a spouse? Did you vow to do the work that you're doing in your profession? Did you vow to lead people? Did you vow to follow the management of someone else with a vision? Did you vow to be that brother, to be that sister? Did you vow? And you know what? Then stop the complaint about it. And stop the feeling that you fall short. Just play with the instruments you got and do it. And let go of the self-doubt, and let go of the fear, and let go of the Satan voice. Because all of it's not worthy. I want to remind you who the rabbis were. The rabbis of the Talmud talk about transformation. The homeland destroyed, the temple destroyed. What did they do? Did they die in the desert? They actually said, what we're going to do now is be a religion of reading. We're going to actually have one of these. We're going to read it every week and come up with new ideas every week and teach what other people thought about reading. We became the most literate people on earth in ever since. That's pretty different. And what did they do to make money? They didn't make any money at that. They actually were Judge Judy's. Right? Who was her husband again? Judge Walker. Judge Judy and Judge Walker are married, by the way. And they're huge philanthropists in LA. So when you get your fundraising rabbi, have him give them a call. They're very good. They were Judge Judy and Judge Walker. They made their living from adjudicating civil disputes, complaints over, Jews complaining, right? I left my deposit, but, the place smelled, so I want my deposit back, and, you sold me a goat, but then the goat died, and I want my money back. And they had a category, they wrote about it a lot, which is this. I love it. It's called Taromet. Taromet is this. When they lay out their decision as judge, right, for before the big judge, often the verdict is this. You are entitled to Taromet. Taromet means you have a legitimate gripe, but no one cares. Exactly what Taromet is. Taromet is, you may be right, but you're not going to get anything. There's no settlement for you. Right? The place really smelled. That was really awful. He should have told you, you're not going to get your deposit back. That's what they did for a living. That's what we need to get rid of. We're before the big judge. And the judge is saying, you want to waste this year complaining? Right? Finding where you fall short. Finding where everyone else falls short. Everything I'm trying to do, it's not worth it. The people at the office don't care. My mom doesn't listen. Or it doesn't turn on her hearing aid for me. Whatever it is. You know what? Taromet. You have a legitimate grievance. You're not going to get anything for it. So don't bother. Let it go. I'm going to ask you to do something for me, which is in your packets in front of you, you have a new sin list for this year. It says, sins against self. Get ready. This is what we're going to do. We are not going to read the sin list. What I want you to do is in a moment, Sharna is going to enter with the Hineni prayer. Here I stand before God. Here I stand before the judge. I need to get rid of the Satan voices and let the shofar drown them out. Read with me the quotes at the top. And then, as Sharna enters, I ask you to read it to yourself. Are there any there that speak to you? All right, you'll see some are contradictory. For the sin of always feeling like I'm always wrong. And then for the sin of always feeling like they're always wrong. So only one or two may apply to you. And if none of them apply to you, if you are someone who plays upon their instrument and lets it flow, and does not judge yourself, but turns it over to the compassionate one who just wants you to flow, then I ask you to carry the rest of us, because not everyone's so lucky. Join with me in starting with Rumi. For years, copying other people and trying to know myself. From within, I couldn't decide what to do. Unable to see, I heard my name being called, and I walked past. I have had my invitation to this world's festival, and thus my life has been blessed. My eyes have seen, and my ears have heard. It was my heart that ceased to play upon my instrument, and I have done all I could.
as the time come at last, that I may go in to see thy face, offer thee my silent supplication. Grant that I may not be a coward, feeling your mercy in my success alone, but let me find the grasp of your hand in my victory. Sharp.